everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From South Parish University, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Medicinal Plant Research, comes new interest in a plant that I used to use every single day with persons with life-challenging illnesses like AIDS and cancer. It's called bitter melon, and it is bitter. So finally, someone got around to saying, does it have anti-diabetic properties? We know it has anti-cancer. We know it has immune modulating. We know it's very good against viruses. Well, they did exactly that. And they found that there are specific anti-diabetic properties in the extract of bitter melon. So for the diabetics or pre-diabetics in the audience, this is good news. The experiment, the researchers obtained the extract from the leafy stem of the M. charantia, C-H-A-R-A-N-T-I-A, and it's very powerful, so it does a lot of good in the body. Now, I would suggest maybe once a week having a glass of bitter melon juice. I would dilute it with some aloe vera, some ginger, and some vitamin C, a really potent tonic. We're also going to look in a moment from University of Queensland, which is in Australia. They've just completed some research and published it in a peer-reviewed journal. And this was done at the Institute of Molecular Biosciences. And they found that there's strong antibiotic potential with cannabis molecules. The main non-psychoactive component of cannabis has been shown to kill gram-negative bacteria for the first time. That's good news. So I'll explain why. But I also want to let you know we have three other things happening today. A special in-depth investigative report that is now being published on PRN.fm. Please download it, read it. If you believe it's important, share it with everyone. Remember, what you and I share, and there are lots of things being shared, documentaries, articles, white papers, that helps people who are not fully informed to get information from which they can make a better and more reasoned decision. When you're banned from sharing anything that challenges COVID or anything challenges the vaccine or genetically modified foods or 5G as examples, then it's up to us, we the people, to do exactly that. So today, you're going to see an article published, and I'm going to report it, that puts together for the first time who we believe are behind the gain of function, meaning they're enhancing a virus that otherwise may not be, well, certainly would not be pandemic or even epidemic, but because they've researched it, it's become that. Why isn't anyone in the mainstream media requesting a special independent investigation on this? This is what they need a new investigation on. Now, as we all know, the 9/11 Commission excluded a lot of exculpatory information, important documentation, including eyewitnesses whose firsthand experience challenged the official position, especially on building number 7. But they went ahead with it anyhow, and that became the final word on it. No conspiracies here. Move on from that. Well, I don't want another 9/11 commission for anything, because that 9/11 commission, the Warren Commission, they were corrupted, and we know that. We can prove it. There's scholarly journals and articles and books detailing that. What we need are good independent journalists coming forward, let's say if we had John Pilger to do a report. We have the documentation. We've posted it, and it shows who exactly was involved in this gain of function, because wouldn't it be interesting if all the people who were heading the war on COVID were the ones responsible for creating it, even if it got out by accident? Now, there's no evidence that it was intentionally released, but there is evidence that it was accidentally released. We're going to be sharing some of that today. Brand new report that you have not seen before about the University of North Carolina and the person that Anthony Fauci was working with and funding, and how his lab, just shortly before COVID, had their own leak, where a woman there, a scientist, was bitten. She had all the protective gear. She had the double gloves. And yet, this squirrel that was injected with viruses bit right through all that. And what do you think the outcome was? It's just amazing. I mean, it's almost defies belief what happened after this woman was bitten. You'll hear about the outcome. Also, there's a gentleman, he is a retired physician, a very noted physician, very respected, very prolific medical doctor in Great Britain. His name is Vernon Coleman. And he calls himself the old man in the rocking chair. Well, his mind is as sharp as a tack. We'll be hearing him talk about the horrors of social credit. It's coming to America. It already exists in China. So what he's saying is not hyperbole or exaggeration. It's real. How do we know it's real? Because prior to that, I'm going to play you a segment of a new documentary called The New Normal. We're going to try to have the producer on the air. And we're going to play about 14 minutes of this documentary. They have interviewed some of the leading characters from all points of view, including Schwab from the World Economic Forum. And you don't have to guess what they're thinking. They've told us. They're not hiding any of this. They're, of course, they were going to get rid of capitalism as we know it. Okay, fine. What are you going to replace with? Shareholder value? What does that mean? Well, you won't believe what it means. The real meaning of it. Does that mean we will all own all businesses? No, no, no. No, it means you won't own anything. When I say you won't own anything, I mean nothing. You won't own a house, apartment, a car you won't own. Think that's not doable? It is. And when's it happening? It already has. It's just going to accelerate now that everyone's into the new reset. President of the United States, Vice President, Hillary Clinton, Justin Trudeau, all the new reset. We have the House of Windsor, Prince Charles at the World Economic Forum promoted the new reset. Yeah, how they're going to paint it for the public is a guaranteed income. Hey, wouldn't everyone just like a guaranteed income? Well, it's a very small guaranteed income, but what do you give up to get that guaranteed income? How about all your rights? All of your rights. So we're going to play you a clip. We're going to put the two together because one highlights what will happen from the other. So that's our show today. And again, we have a lot to share. We begin with the newest research. This is the looking at this. This is a synthetic cannabinol, diol. It's better known as CBD or CBD oil. And it's been shown for the first time to kill the bacteria responsible for gonorrhea and meningitis and Legionnaire's disease. That's terrific news. The research collaboration between the University of Queensland and Botanics was led up to this new class of antibiotics. And because we get a lot of antibiotics, which can be life-saving, but they're overused, and hence you develop resistance. Bacteria can actually live no matter what antibiotic you throw against it. Now, they're not looking at colloidal silver, and they're not looking at other treatments like ozone that can kill many of these bacteria-resistant microbes. But this is good news. CBD oil, and that's what they're looking at. So with all of Americans susceptible to bacterial infection, especially MRSA, the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or what they call the golden staph, you get it, and you get it in hospitals. They don't sterilize all the surface areas, and that's really dangerous. By the way, the bad bacteria breaks down biofilms, and some of these biofilms are very toxic, like the slimy buildup of bacteria, such as dental plaque on the surface of the teeth, which help bacteria such as MRSA survive antibiotic treatments. So it knocks that out, kills that. So good news for those who might be susceptible to that. Also, there's new research on what they're calling the magic molecule for eternal youth. It's NRF2. And as I've mentioned to you many times, I'm in communication with the world's leading anti-aging research scientific groups. In fact, two of those groups help sponsor putting together the medical part of the meaning, the blood research, what do we have to measure in the blood, and the physical exercises before and after to show objective criteria. And they're also very excited about the results of the three studies we've done. We're doing a fourth and final study, a two-week study, the last 2 weeks of April. And in any case, they're looking at NRF2. It's just one of thousands of critical proteins in the cell, but it's one that we know a lot more about. Once any molecule achieves a certain level of celebrity status, then everyone wants to know what's it about and how can we get it to market and how can we get it to be a part of the synergistic program to help slow down or reverse the aging process. Again, I look at all this differently because I see it's a combination of many pieces to the puzzle, not just one. And so M, N is in Nancy, R is in Richard, F is in Frank, 2 is good for every cell in your body, and every cell in your body is good. Then the logic is that NRF2 must be good for your body. The weak link in that argument, however, is that all cells are not good. Nobody wants harmful bacteria cells to flourish. Nobody wants cancer cells to flourish. So a paper just published in Nature now suggests that inhibiting NRF2 can block the migration and invasion of non-small cell lung cancer cells through the body. So if anyone's going to derive benefit from NRF2, they may need to be smart about it. I'm just telling you that it's one piece of a puzzle, but it's important as an important piece. Also, they're looking at cysteine as a way of helping to reduce oxidative stress. We've known it's good, and we know that glutathione keeps a normal protective process in place, keeps it in check. So you need to look at the nutrients that you're taking in through your diet and through supplementation and say, what goal do I want to achieve by making sure my liver is producing enough glutathione? Oh, I don't produce enough? What's the consequence of being deficient glutathione? Then I can supplement. To what degree? Do I need some personal guided attention? Probably yes, because the average person's not a nutritionist or a dietitian, wouldn't have a background on this. We know that when cells don't have enough cysteine to make glutathione, oxidative membrane lipids go unrepaired, and then that's not a good thing. You don't want that. So getting some cysteine, as I mentioned in our last program, into your diet is a good thing. 500 milligrams a day, it's not much, and that is important. Also, when it comes to eating the cruciferous vegetables, we should be eating some every day. And this is from the University of South China, because there's a compound that decreases breast cancer stem cell-like properties. Now, mind you, if you have surgery and they don't get out the cancer stem cells, then the cancer is going to grow back, can grow back. That's why you got to get the stem cells. So according to this report from Hunan, the People's Republic of China, breast cancer is the most frequently diagnosed malignancy and leading cause of cancer-related deaths among women worldwide. And tumor reoccurrence, or metastasis, is caused by cancer stem cells and has a dismal prognosis for breast cancer patients. However, there's good news in that they have now been able to determine that targeting breast cancer stem cells, what are initial would be BCSC, for eradication is a potential method to improve clinical outcomes. And they have what is called isothiocyanate, C-Y-A-N-A-T-E, isothiocyanate. And that's That's a novel epigenetic regulator derived from cruciferous vegetables that has marked anti-tumor effects. Now, we don't know everything about this, but we do know when you're eating your broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, kale, watercress, radishes, then you're getting these tumor suppressors, and that is important. So this can actually stop the stem cell from occurring. That's good. And also, University of Illinois is now showing us not only is your good gut bacteria helping to digest dietary fiber, it's releasing important antioxidant. We know that dietary fiber found in whole grains is a large component of many diets. But little is understood about how we digest the fiber, as humans lack enzymes to break down the complex molecules. Some species of gut bacteria break down the fiber in such a way that it's not only becoming digestible, but releases what is called ferulic acid, F-E-R-U-L-I-C. That's an important antioxidant with multiple health benefits, and that's very good. So when you're going to have your whole grains, there's your brown rice, there's your quinoa and millet, among others, you're actually promoting good gut bacteria. That's breaking down, releasing this antioxidant, and that can help you. And by the way, just as an example, ferulic acid has been shown to have very good immunomodulating and anti-inflammatory activities, and that's important for diabetes, allergic inflammation, Alzheimer's, cardiovascular, microbial infections, candida, cancer. So you want that. Remember, whole grains, yes. Refined carbohydrate grains, no. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications. And also, this is serious. This is from the University of Pittsburgh, and it says that stress may awaken dormant cancer cells, meaning they were dormant, your stress awakened them. This was published in Science Translational Medicine. All the more reason to engage in constructive, healthy stress reduction, guided meditation, deep breathing, sound therapy, yoga, prayer, something that relaxes your entire being and allows you to feel grounded can help then prevent these dormant cancer cells from awakening. We are 18 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a special in-depth report that will provide you with information, and hopefully you will share it with others, that can allow us to go further in understanding how do we get here? How do we get to this place? Why isn't anyone asking the obvious question? If this could have come from gain of function research, why were we doing this, especially at a time when Barack Obama had outlawed it, made it illegal, stopped all funding, but Anthony Fauci went around him? Why isn't that a story? Why is the media so silent? Are they just ignorant? I don't think so. A lot of very smart people are in the media. So if they're that smart, then shouldn't they be looking into this? I believe they should. They just haven't. Not a single member of the mainstream media has looked into this, and they should have. We have. We'll share our objective information. It's been vetted for accuracy, and our lawyers looked at it. So you can use it. Back in a moment with it. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you. We're all over the world now, and please share this information. The title of the article is COVID-19 Pandemic as a Psychological Coup d'etat. We have almost reached a full year since the spread of SARS-CoV-2 was proclaimed a pandemic. If we are to believe the World Health Organization's and individual governments' official statistics, the number of confirmed cases is reaching 100 million, with over 2 million deaths. Indeed, if these numbers can be relied upon, we can surely acknowledge there is a real pandemic. It would be common sense, therefore, to expect, in fact, demand international health agencies and governments to make every effort to identify the virus's origin. Suspicions that the virus now responsible for the spectrum of medical syndromes known as COVID-19 may have been bioengineered and escaped from a maximum security BSL-4 lab in Wuhan, China, were already voiced within a month after its identification was first reported. Several highly respected medical experts, including Dr. David Relman at Ceres about its origin, remain unanswered, and new questions are mounting. Recently, Jamie Metzl, he's a World Health Organization advisor who earlier served under Joe Biden in the Senate and in Bill Clinton's National Security Council and the State Department, told the Toronto Sun that the hypothesis of the virus' natural origin in a Wuhan wet market is, quote, a lie, end quote. It's no secret, Metzl noted, that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was heavily engaged in, quote, gain-of-function research to, quote, amplify the virility of viruses, end quote. That there is very reasonable evidence that coronaviruses were being engineered in a laboratory goes back to 2003, perhaps earlier. That year, many Russian medical scientists, including Moscow's head epidemiologist, Dr. Nikolai Filatov, shared their opinion that the first SARS outbreak originated from a bioweapons lab. In January 2020, less than a month since the first reported case in Wuhan, Dr. Igor Nikolim, a former member of the United Nations Commission on Biological and Chemical Weapons, stated in an interview that the U.S. has been funding biolaboratories throughout the world. Who knew? Did you know that in Kazakhstan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Taiwan, the Philippines, and elsewhere, quote, wherever there are these American biolaboratories, or near them, there are outbreaks of new diseases, often unknown, end quote. This was also confirmed by the founding president of Echo Health Alliance, Dr. Peter Daszak, a fundamental player in the saga of gain-of-function research on coronavirus and other viral pathogens. During an interview at a scientific conference in Singapore in early December 2019, Daszak, less than a month before the first COVID case in Wuhan, stated, quote, you can manipulate them in the lab pretty easily. Spike protein drives a lot of what happens with coronavirus. Zoonotic risk. So you can get the sequence, you can build the protein, and we work with Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina to do this and insert the backbone of another virus and do some work in the lab, end quote. He is acknowledging publicly for the first time we are aware of this gain of purpose research. So it's not specious, it's not speculative, it's not conspiracy theory. He's acknowledging it. Now he brings in this Professor Barrick, B-A-R-I-C. And by the way, Barrick was the one who told New York Magazine, quote, can you rule out a laboratory escape? The answer in this case is probably not, end quote. Barrick has firsthand knowledge of this probability. In 2016, one of the researchers at his University of North Carolina Biosafety Level 3 lab was bitten by a mouse infected with a bioengineered SARS coronavirus strain. Worse, according to records obtained by ProPublica, the scientist was permitted to resume her life without any quarantine. Barrick's lab also encountered other incidences that could have potentially released its engineered viruses upon the American public. However, the university has refused to provide details. Back in 2015, Barrick had warned that a bat virus could jump species and affect humans. In a study published in October 2003 for the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, this same Barrick at the University of North Carolina and his colleagues had, quote, assembled a full-length DNA of the SARS-CoV or BAN-I strain and have rescued molecular clone SARS viruses that contained the expected marker mutations inserted into their component clones, end quote. This infectious coronavirus clone was subsequently patented, but only after the CDC overruled the U.S. Patent Office's denial of issuance. That same year, Bill Gates appointed Anthony Fauci to serve on his foundation's Global Grand Challenges Scientific Advisory Board. Shortly thereafter, efforts commenced to develop a SARS-2 vaccine, which included Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. To date, Moderna has been granted over 130 federal U.S. patents to develop a vaccine against SARS-2, including military DARPA grant for RNA vaccine technology. That was in 2013. Echo Health Alliance, according to Alex Baden-Mayer, lead attorney and director for the Organic Consumer Association, has conducted remarkable investigative research into the gain-of-function studies and the primary individuals behind the overseeing and funding of this research. She has discovered that the majority of Echo Health's funding derives from the U.S. Department of Defense, the National Institutes of Health, and Anthony Fauci. Baden-Mayer's probing inquiries uncovered a cabal of shady figures, including Daszak, Barrick, and his Chinese colleague, Dr. Shi Zeng Li, at the Wuhan lab. Bill Gates' foundation director, Scott Dow, former Human and Health Services director, Dr. Robert Kadlec, and Anthony Fauci. Together, this group, a part of what journalist Brian Berletek has called the Pandemic Industrial Complex, has been engaging in private contracts with military bioweapons projects and virus hunting in the wild for gain-of-function studies for almost 20 years. Curiously, there is another character deeply connected with Daszak and the gain-of-function studies sponsored by Echo Health, David R. Franz. Franz serves as Echo Health's policy health advisor. According to Baden-Mayer, who has investigated Franz's history and background, he was formerly a commander at Fort Detrick Bioweapons Laboratory, and that was working on gain-of-function studies on pathogens for developing bioweapons. He was also involved in the anthrax investigation shortly after 9/11 and was a colleague of Dr. Bruce Ivan, who was accused for the release of encapsulated anthrax aerosol mailed to congressional and legislators shortly after his mysterious death. Recently, Dr. David Martin, founder of the company MCAM, C-A-M, and a fellow at the University of Virginia School of Business Management, released his dossier on Anthony Fauci, summarizing over two decades of investigations into the very disturbing research and patents filed for, quote, synthetically altering the coronavirus family for the express purpose of general research, pathogenic enhancement, I repeat, pathogenic enhancement, detection, manipulation, and potential therapeutic interventions, end quote. Before the first SARS outbreak in 2003, Barrick filed a patent for producing, quote, an infectious, replication-defective coronavirus, end quote. In other words, the University of North Carolina, with federal grants, was amplifying a coronavirus to make it more infectious. We were taught nothing on this. We were given nothing. Despite the illegal nature of this and other patents filed by the CDC, and is because patent laws forbids patenting any life form, the government and its laboratories sealed under contract, cornered the coronavirus market. In the event of a coronavirus outbreak, only those corporations or institutions that acquired licensure from the National Institute of Health would be permitted to work with these bioengineered viruses for developing therapeutic drugs and vaccines. Controversy has arisen over the confusion about the actual number of COVID-19 deaths and whether or not many, if not most, deaths are due to other causes. deaths in the presence of SARS-2 are not the same as deaths due to the virus. We heard this narrative repeated before and stated directly by the CDC back in 2003. During the first SARS outbreak, the CDC, in its Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report dated April 4, 2003, stated, quote, "Anyone showing signs of fever or respiratory symptoms who traveled in or near areas affected by the virus would be labeled as SARS patients, despite many of these individuals being diagnosed with other respiratory illnesses," end quote. David Martin has released his Fauci/COVID-19 dossier, a 205-page document citing specific charges against the CDC, Dr. Anthony Fauci and his National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and individuals engaged in coronavirus gain-of-function, end quote, research for funding and what he believes conspiring to commit acts of terror, lying to Congress, conspiring to engage in criminal commercial activity, and market manipulation and allocation. These are serious charges, and data Martin has collected is near conclusive and deeply disturbing. The dossier has been filed with U.S. Attorney General and is essential reading for everyone who to understand the details about how the current pandemic has been or may have been an orchestrated strategy and its unraveling over the course of 20 years. During a recent video appearance, Martin condensed the background of corruption and preparatory planning for the pandemic long before the outbreak. Speaking at the February 2016 Forum on Medical and Public Health Preparedness for Catastrophe Events, Daszak stated, quote, "Until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at an emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, we need to increase public understanding of the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics follow the hype. We need to use this hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of process," end quote. It's important to observe how Daszak lays out a strategy for a coronavirus or influenza pandemic to be framed as a commercial opportunity for the benefit of corporations and their investors and the role the media will play in maximizing such profit. In retrospect, Daszak's scenario has played out accurately according to his thoughts. Worse, the pandemic is now being manipulated by the World Economic Forum, the International Monetary Fund, Bill Gates, and the transnational class of corporate and banking elites, as well as the Biden administration and the Chinese, British, Canadian, and German governments as an opportunity to completely restructure the global economy. This will necessitate a thorough overhaul of the entire economic system, thereby strengthening the global institutionalization of commercial oversight that will eventually nullify the independence of the modern nation-state. Dr. Martin's dossier continues to outline a series of actions, in his words, to deal with the pandemic that Fauci has undertaken as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. These include, he is purporting, quote, one, acting against the American Medical Association's April 2020 recommendation that, quote, face masks should not be worn by healthy individuals from acquiring respiratory infections because there is no evidence to suggest that face masks worn by healthy individuals are effective in preventing people from becoming ill. Two, acting against existing published studies that show to date not a single study has confirmed that social distancing of any population prevented the transmission or the infection of SARS-2, COVID-19, and 3, in violation of FTC Act 15, U.S. Code 41, no product or service can be advertised to, quote, prevent, treat, or cure human disease unless you possess competent, reliable evidence substantiating that the claims are true at the time they are made, end quote. This third point applies to Anthony Fauci's group promotion of face masks, as well as Fauci's aggressive push to make the drug remdesivir, which Fauci is personally financially invested in as a first line of treatment. Isn't that a conflict of interest to promote something as the head of an agency where you are looked upon as the great oracle of this pandemic and that your guidance is taken as gospel without challenge ever? And now you're, did you tell people, I have a financial interest in this drug? If these charges of activity against sound scientific evidence are true, they warrant a thorough investigation in an international criminal court to determine their motivations. The mishandling of the pandemic has caused enormous suffering and deaths for billions of people. Lives and livelihoods have been completely upended, and our leaders are telling us things will never return to the old normal. In the meantime, the dominant forces of capitalism, aside from profiting over this catastrophe, are now framing the pandemic as an opportunity that will further reconfigure all of our social structures, including commerce, education, transportation, monitoring healthcare. It is, in our opinion, a coup d'etat against civilization's collective psyche to foment a regime change in behavior that will eventually turn humanity into the slaves of technology as a means of social conditioning. Our only weapon against the likes of Fauci, Gates, and the transnational class of elites is educating ourselves of the damning investigations being conducted by individuals such as Dr. David Martin, Alex Baden-Mayer, Reinhold Fulmich, Robert Kennedy Jr., and others who are making every effort to shed light on the darkness in Washington and government around the world, determined to launch a brave new world. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we're going to take you to a new documentary. I'm giving you a piece of that documentary. We look forward to having the producers of the documentary on our program in the near future. But this is good proof, and the documentary is called The New Normal. This will give you one segment of that documentary, but it shows you what's coming and what's here now, and how they're going to use what's coming to control virtually everything in our society. And the new Great Reset, that's already being proclaimed by everyone in power and at Davos and the World Economic Forum. So it's happening. If you deny this is happening, then don't be surprised when one day you find out you can't buy anything with cash. You can't travel. You don't have the right permits. It's coming. It's here now. Back in a moment.
Now, the fourth industrial revolution describes the emergence of artificial intelligence and how it integrates more with humans. Artificial intelligence, or AI, can already be seen in our daily lives, from how we check out at the supermarket to how we check in for a flight. But it's far more advanced than most people realize. In August 2020, entrepreneur Elon Musk gave a demo of his new company, Neuralink. Connected to our brains with tiny wires, this microchip is synced with AI, enabling humans to control anything from prosthetic limbs to computer games. This working proof of concept has already been fitted into people. It has the potential to completely transform the way we interact online.
So there's actually a lot of functions that this device could do related to monitoring your health and warning you about a possible heart attack or stroke or other damage, as well as sort of convenience features like playing music. It could do a lot. It's sort of like if your phone went at your brain or something.
It's a cyborg. It's a combination. It's a combination of electronics and biology.
Yeah. Things are getting more and more connected.
Kai-Fu Lee is the former president of Google China and Microsoft Research China, as well as the author of New York Times bestseller, AI's Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order. Kai-Fu believes that China will be the AI superpower within 5 years.
For those of you who haven't been to China for the 3 years, please be careful when you go, because your credit card and cash may not be accepted. China has pretty much been taken over by mobile payment. In the age of AI, if data is the new oil, then China is the new Saudi Arabia.
One concern that is topical in the development of AI is the displacement of jobs.
Robots are clearly replacing people's jobs. They're working 24/7. They're more efficient.
So therefore, are you convinced long-term that we're going to have a jobs problem in the world?
Not long term, but maybe in the next 10 years, within the next 10 years.
You mean it's going to happen much sooner?
Much sooner. If a lot of people will find happiness without working, that would be a happy outcome.
At Amazon Fulfillment Centers, robots transport items to humans, who then pack them to be delivered. Amazon believes that within 10 years, they will not need a single human to fulfill an order. According to the World Economic Forum, 50% of the workforce will need reskilling by 2025, and it's likely that only a fraction of these will find work, resulting in a large proportion of the workforce becoming unemployed.
There's a pretty good chance we end up with a universal basic income or something like that due to automation. You know, people have time to do other things and have more complex things, more interesting things, certainly more leisure time. And then we've got to figure out how we integrate with a world in the future with advanced AI.
One idea that is gaining popularity is to charge tech companies with a robot tax, which can be distributed to the unemployed as a universal basic income.
I don't think the robot companies are going to, you know, be outraged that it might be a tax. It's okay.
Contrary to the past, to the previous three revolutions, probably jobs will be faster destroyed compared to new ones being created.
This is Klaus Schwab, the author of this book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution. He's also the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, which is funded by the largest global enterprises and whose members include CEOs, heads of state, and government ministers from countries such as the UK and US.
The fourth industrial revolution will impact our lives completely. It will change actually us, our own identity, and of course gives life to such policies and developments like smart traffic, smart government, smart cities.
In June 2019, the UK government published details about their partnership with the World Economic Forum in a policy called Regulation for the Fourth Industrial Revolution. 1 year later, in June 2020, the World Economic Forum released this promotional video entitled The Great Reset. The purpose for this film is to imply that everything from economics to our culture needs to change. After the reset, it shows images of digital technology, biological cells, populations, cash, climate change, traffic management, and this. Seem familiar? This promotional video was released 6 months before Margaret Keenan received the first COVID-19 vaccine. In November 2020, Time magazine published The Great Reset on their front cover. The World Economic Forum's managing director, Jeremy Jergens, believes that it will have a devastating impact on our economy.
You know, if we look at The Great Reset, you know, we're still at the early stages of a global crisis that's going to forever transform society. You know, when it first started, people said, okay, this is the biggest crisis to hit since 2007-2008 financial crisis. And then a little bit later, they said, oh wow, this is the biggest crisis since World War II. Now we're looking at them saying, oh look, this is comparable to what happened in the Great Depression.
Politicians are also endorsing the campaign.
This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems.
History would look at this crisis as the great opportunity for reset.
All elements of the Great Reset are fundamental to building the future we need.
And it's even promoted by the royal family, who posted this video on their YouTube page with the Great Reset hashtag.
We are on the verge of catalytic breakthroughs that will alter our view of what is possible and profitable within the framework of a sustainable future. We need nothing short of a paradigm shift, one that inspires action at revolutionary levels and pace. We simply cannot waste any more time. The only limit is our willingness to act. And the time to act is now.
The World Economic Forum believes that capitalism needs to be reinvented. Their Build Back Better slogan has been adopted by politicians across the globe.
This moment also gives us a much greater chance to be radical and to do things differently, to build back better.
Because we can only build back better if we lean on one another.
Over the last 2 weeks, I've shared my agenda for economic recovery. I call it Build Back Better, because we can't just build back to the way things were before. We have to do it better. And the first plank of my Build Back Better plan rejects the defeatist view that automation and globalization mean we can't ensure American workers lead to a future made in America.
So what does the world look like after the Great Reset? This social media post by the World Economic Forum demonstrates 8 predictions by 2030. Here are 3 of them. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Whatever you want, you'll rent and it'll be delivered by drone. And Western values will have been tested to the breaking point. Many of Boris Johnson's new policies fall in line with the World Economic Forum's objectives. In November 2020, his new Green Industrial Revolution plan included a ban on petrol and diesel cars by 2030. Combined with other current restrictions, such as blocking vehicle access to side roads, causing gridlock on main roads, extending the congestion zone, and introducing a paper mile road tax, one might think that he's attempting to remove ownership of cars.
The biggest application is the autonomous driving. This is going to replace the entire transportation that we're used to today. You will no longer buy cars. Your car is parked 96% of the time, so it's depreciating. How bad is that for an investment? Right? Only 4% of the time is it getting you from place A to place B. But imagine there is an Uber that gets here in 30 seconds and is very reliable, very clean, and there's no nasty driver because there is no driver, and it's very safe. Would you not buy a car? One thing about AI is it gets better with data. In 10 years after its first launch, it'll probably be so much better than people. Most of us will be afraid to drive. You know why? Because autonomous vehicles will start talking to each other. They will miss each other by 1 centimeter. And we as humans will become our worst enemies, because we're going to be the threat to our lives. The machines are going to be safe. And pretty soon after that, humans will be disallowed from driving.
Suppose you're a 50-year-old truck driver and you just lost your job to a self-driving vehicle. Now, there are new jobs in designing software or in teaching yoga to engineers. But how does a 50-year-old truck driver reinvent himself or herself as a software engineer or as a yoga teacher? Because AI is nowhere near its full potential. All jobs will disappear, new jobs will emerge, but then the new jobs will rapidly change and vanish.
At the World Economic Forum 2020 annual meeting in Davos, historian, philosopher, and author Yuval Noah Harari warned the audience about the dangers of artificial intelligence.
We hear so much about the enormous promises of technology, and these promises are certainly real, but technology might also disrupt human society and the very meaning of human life in numerous ways, ranging from the creation of a global useless class to the rise of data colonialism and of digital dictatorships. Those who fail in the struggle against irrelevance would constitute a new useless class. And this useless class will be separated by an ever-growing gap from the ever more powerful elite. We are already in the midst of an AI arms race, with China and the USA leading the race, and most countries being left far, far behind. AI will likely create immense wealth in a few high-tech hubs, while other countries will either go bankrupt or will become exploited data colonies. Just think, what will happen to developing economies once it is cheaper to produce cars in California than in Mexico? And what will happen to politics in your country in 20 years when somebody in San Francisco or in Beijing knows the entire medical and personal history of every politician and every journalist in your country, including all their sexual escapades, all their mental weaknesses, and all their corrupt dealings? When you have enough data, you don't need to send soldiers in order to control a country.
Between the beginning of the pandemic and August 2020 alone, seven Silicon Valley tech giants added nearly $2.5 trillion to their market values, $400 billion of which was added by Microsoft. Founder Bill Gates also has an interest in vaccines, where he, through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, owns stock in the vaccine manufacturing companies Pfizer and Moderna. Both companies have been developing a new generation of vaccines that interacts directly with our DNA. Traditional immunization methods involve injecting a dead or a weakened form of the virus. This triggers the immune system to create antibodies, which helps to protect us in the case of a virus getting into our system. Pfizer's and Moderna's new messenger RNA technology, however, is not a standard immunization vaccine, but rather genetic engineering. Instead of injecting a virus into the patient, their approach is to inject synthetic molecules that transport instructions to the cell on how to create antibodies to fight the virus.
That's just a piece of what you're going to be hearing more about. Just today, quote, "Not bot, not beast. Scientists create first ever living programmable organism," from Simon Colin and Kobe Lins. "A remarkable combination of artificial intelligence and biology has produced the world's first living robots." Didn't know about that? Now you do. Remember I said they will bring this out and show you why we need this. Every robotic they're bringing will take a job, and there won't be any jobs for probably 80% of the American population within 2 years. They're saying five, but they know that it's going to be faster. And I will keep you abreast of what's actually going on. And by the way, this also today from Adria Damon, World Socialist website, "Facebook purges left-wing pages and individuals." Quote, "On Friday, Facebook carried out a purge of left-wing anti-war progressive pages and accounts, including leading members of the Socialist Equality Party. Facebook gave no explanation why the accounts were disabled or even a public acknowledgement that the deletions had occurred. At least a half dozen leading members of the party had their Facebook accounts permanently disabled." It's happening. Remember I said be careful about who you invite into your movement, because once you use them for what you need, you have no control over anarchists, and they will take down your house. We're beginning to see this. And also from CNBC today, companies are racing to build digital passports for people to prove they've had their COVID vaccines. Everywhere you look, the evidence is there. It's just we're not looking. We're distracted. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.